All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio. For our first interview, on the line we have Alan Jennings. Now, Alan Jennings is a regular writer for Green Left, frequently commenting on areas related to Latin America and also Myanmar, which we previously had him on the program for. But today we're going to be interviewing him about politics in Nicaragua. He just recently wrote an article for Green Left, kind of giving a bit of a summary, I guess, of some of the current kind of political developments in Nicaragua. And Alan has also had the benefit of having lived in Nicaragua for a number of years, and also I think he was also had the experience of being an eyewitness and almost and part in supporting the Nicaragua Revolution back in 1989. So yeah, good morning, Alan.
Morning, Jacob. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
Morning, Alan. It's Felix here.
Hi, Felix.
All right. So maybe to start off the discussion, Alan, I guess drawing from your recent article for Green Left, I guess for our listeners' sort of benefit, can you give us a can you start us off by giving a bit of a background and an overview of politics in Nicaragua, and then we can sort of move on to some of the current sort of key political developments that have happened?
Sure. You know, like any country, it's a long and convoluted history and quite complex. But in summary, you know, the last century in Nicaragua was controlled by the United States, and that's really critical to its whole history, which, you know, we'll go on to talk about more. But, you know, the United States invaded the country in 1912, occupied the country for a number of years, and then set up a dictatorship in 1933, which happened to be the president was the head of the army, and so Somoza and his two sons ran the country for 40 odd years as a, you know, US backed dictatorship through the last century, until it was got so unpopular that it was overthrown by a popular revolution led by the Sandinista National Liberation Front, usually called the Sandinistas, in 1979. So 79, 42 years ago, is when this revolution happened. And it was really an amazing thing. You know, remember, this was the time of the Cold War. We had examples of socialist countries supposedly in Europe and, you know, Russia, Soviet Union, but this was quite different. And they did amazing things. I mean, they really inspired a lot of people and helped the poor in Nicaragua. They're distributing land. A lot of the land was owned by Somoza, and that was taken and distributed to those who'd worked the land. They focused on health and education. In fact, the literacy campaign in 1980 was regarded as the most successful literacy campaign in the history of the world, not just Nicaragua. And so it became really an inspiring revolution. And those of us on the left were very much inspired by it and went there to support it. But of course, this didn't make the United States very happy. Firstly, that they'd lost one of their countries in Latin America. And secondly, it became an example for others, and they thought this revolution might expand and spread. And so they began to fund a counter-revolution. What many people would remember, and even if you don't know much about Nicaragua, you probably remember this, the Contra War against the Sandinista Revolution was at the top of the news for a while in the 80s when the United States funded disgruntled and opportunist Nicaraguans to undermine the revolution, you know, by mining, you know, places, blowing up schools and generally making it difficult for the country to run. And in fact, 30,000 people were killed during this period. And in the end, the Nicaraguan government, to defend their revolution, had to bring in military service, and that wasn't very popular. And in 1990, when this was 10 years after the revolution, they had elections, And surprisingly to everybody, the Sandinistas lost. It was a close election, but they lost to a cobbled together US-backed coalition, which won the elections in 1990. And even more surprisingly, I suppose, the Sandinistas gave up power. Probably the first time that any government has taken power through arms, through revolution, and given up through elections. Because they, I think most of the people in Nicaragua just wanted to end that low-intensity war that the United States waged.
Hmm. And I guess that gets into, the next kind of question, which exists following kind of the defeat of the Sandinistas and or the FSLN in 1990 in the electoral sphere. I'm kind of interested in knowing, about two kind of aspects, because there were the main kind of opposition in that sort of period from 1990 to 2007, as you sort of note in your article. But, of course, they returned to power back in 2007. So I also want to kind of know what has been the legacy of that government as well and its contradictions.
The Sandinistas, I should mention that Daniel Ortega, who led the Sandinistas and was the president during this period of the revolution in the 1980s, stayed as head of the party. And the FSLN, the Sandinistas, even though at that stage they were still quite popular. Like I said, they lost elections, the close elections. They're still quite popular because Nicaraguans are very political, and they were even more politicized during the revolution. And the mass movements, the workers, the women's movement, rural workers, were still very organized and very supportive of the directions of the, what really is a socialist government. And in opposition, the Sandinistas maintained that support and their links with these mass movements. And so they still had quite a lot of support in opposition. And so they were in opposition from 1990, when they lost the elections, to 2007, which is, 17 years later, when they won again. But I should say, during this period, Daniel Ortega... there were some contradictions, but I mean, he got involved in protecting himself. He was still a member of parliament, and he one thing he was accused of sexual abuse of his stepdaughter. And to protect him from going to court, he made a pact with the right, with government, the government in the right at the time, and basically said, "Look, you protect me and I'll protect you from your corruption," and started to make these alliances and pacts which protected him and kept him away from the courts. And this was the first signs of basically Ortega would do anything to stay in power. And that happened through this opposition period. So you had this sort of contradiction where they were still supported, the Sandinistas, but Daniel Ortega himself was seen to be... dodgy, to say the least.
And I guess going into maybe the second kind of part of the question, are you still there, Alan?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, sorry, you kind of dropped out. What can you tell us, since you've given a good kind of explanation, I guess, of the first part, what can you guess tell us, since their return to power, what has actually been the legacy of that government?
You mean since they came back to power in 2007?
Yes.
They like I say, because they had this popular support, a fairly high percentage, let's say 30-40% of the population still support the Sandinistas. They won elections in 2007 and have won elections consistently, 2011 and 2016, since then, and going to elections again later this year in a few months' time. Like I say, the legacy is, they still have a population who are largely politicized, quite organized, and I have to say, willing to go to the streets and throw out a dictatorship if need be. And over this period of time, Ortega and his partner, his wife, Rosario Murillo, has become more repressive and more exclusive of any form of opposition, even within their own party. And so they, bit by bit, and I suppose more recently, more repressive and more purging, basically, anybody who could threaten their power. And in 2018, it came to a head, really, when student protests were smashed by really pro-Sandinista thugs, and really showed, and 300 people were killed in those protests in 2018, and it really showed the true colours of Ortega. I won't say the Sandinistas, but Ortega showed his true colours, that, you know, he's prepared to do anything to stay in power. And more recently, you've had this year a creation of a law which basically says anybody who opposes the government is treasonous and will be imprisoned for that. And he's imprisoned basically everybody who could be his opposition in the coming elections. So, that's where we are now, where you've got coming up elections and they're basically have imprisoned anybody who may stand against them. And it's likely that the Sandinistas or Ortega and Murillo will win again.
Felix had a question he wanted to kind of ask.
That's very interesting, Alan. Thanks. It's obviously they've changed a lot since they voluntarily handed power after the election loss in 1990. But and it's horrifying to hear how repressive and authoritarian they've become. But do you have a sense of like what the politics? The left-right type of politics that party is? Have they shifted to the right in part of becoming authoritarian?
Yeah, well, it's a really hard question. I mean, for a start, you still have the United States doing their best to get rid of Ortega, which is a sign of... that the politics of the Ortega government are still not pro-US. It's not right-wing, not pro-US, and still an enemy of the United States. So that gives you some indication that it's the United States is not happy with the regime, with the government. But I would class them as maybe not Stalinist, but certainly... authoritarian populists, populist in the sense that I wouldn't call their policies socialist anymore. They, especially Rosario, who's now vice president, is well known for giving gifts, giving roofs for houses, giving food, that sort of thing. Populist policies of giving things to people to maintain their popularity and support. So it's really not as clear cut as they're still socialist, but they're still probably nominally, especially in their international stance, leftist, and very much in the camp of Venezuela and Cuba. In Latin America, and are supported by Russia and China when it comes to potential US intervention. So it's seen probably externally as still a left wing government, but to me it's not black and white. It's not as clear as it's a left wing government. Authoritarian populist.
They haven't introduced like land reform or anything like that. It's really
no. Weird. Well, I mean, they have really no I mean, we know personally people involved in that. I mean, they made a complete mess of the land reform, because in the land reform of the revolution, which is 40-odd years ago, they never actually finalised titles for land. And they gave land to people, and a lot of that land has eventually been, as you know, through this period of right-wing government, you know, the those who left and lost their land in the past came back and reclaimed their land. And so it really is, it's really messy, the ownership of land. And their focus on education and health is really dwindled. And just looking at the development status and the figures of the country, it has really plummeted in terms of levels of poverty and even the levels of education and healthcare have plummeted. And so, you know, obviously they're not focusing on what they did before.
Yeah, okay. So they... The base of support that they have is largely sort of nostalgia from the good period of the Sandinistas, is it? Or like,
well, you think about it. I mean, we know a lot of people who will still vote Sandinista, and they say, look, we know that, you know, Daniel Ortega is rotten, but the history of the country, when you've got a country which has been hounded and controlled by the United States, the party that led the revolution is the Sandinistas. And we've seen this in many other countries. I mean, even something like Zimbabwe and other countries like that, when you get a revolution and you get a revolutionary leader who is responsible, really, for the overthrow of a US-backed dictator, and that legacy will never disappear. And irrespective, in some cases, of what they do after that, they will maintain a certain level of support because of that. And also, what is the alternative? The alternative in Nicaragua is a pro-US, you know, back to the you know, US-controlled government. So it's a really difficult one. As I ended that article, it's like the Nicaraguans are really between a rock and a hard place when it comes to choosing their government, because they've got a corrupt, repressive, nominally left-wing leadership, and the alternative is a pro-US, you know, government.
I want to go a bit more into kind of detail that, because we've been having a good sort of discussion, you know, of criticising of the government's kind of approach and also the repression. But I guess you've pointed out accurately the issue of a case of US imperialism. I guess what can you tell us, I guess, in a bit more detail about the nature of the opposition to the ruling government and the backing they received of the US? Like, what is the political program they are wanting to implement within Nicaragua? And what is the basis of the United States' kind of continued interest of Nicaragua? Now, obviously, that's almost like a self-explanatory kind of question, but I'm sort of interested in the kind of conditions specific to Nicaragua that makes the United States so interested in continuing to try and interfere and overthrow the existing government.
Yeah, no, I mean, Nicaragua has been a obsession, if you like, along with Cuba for, you know, 100 years. In fact, right when they invaded Nicaragua 100 years ago, 110 years ago, the aim was to put a canal through the country as an alternative to the Panama Canal, and they still have aims of doing that, but that's not so much the issue. I mean, Nicaragua is in the United States' backyard, as they see it, and, you know, so close to the country, so close to the United States, is where massive profits can be made when you have a U.S.-controlled government. Particularly in the area of labour-intensive, you know, production, particularly fruit and, you know, any labour-intensive production. So the United States still aims to get control of Nicaragua, as they do every other country in Central America and South America. I mean, this hasn't changed. But the methods they're using now is probably not an invasion, but usually using different forms of support for pro-US groups in the country. And they're doing this exactly the same as they're doing in Venezuela and Bolivia and any other left-wing government they might try to do. And what they're doing in Nicaragua is funding particular sort of media organizations and youth organizations and democracy organizations, NGOs, through millions and millions and millions of dollars to, let's say, train, in inverted commas, train them to be, you know, fight for democracy and all that sort of stuff, which is really their way of getting into the political, you know, elements, you know, political aspect of the country and eventually taking power through, you know, a US-backed coalition, which they still have hope to do. And they've, you know, there's very clear evidence of US aid going into millions and millions of dollars, particularly into the pockets of opposition groups. And the coalition that defeated the Sandinistas back in 1990 was led by Violeta Chamorro. Now, Violeta Chamorro was the first female president of the country, and her daughter now is seen as the most likely person to by the U.S. to overthrow the this current Sandinista government.
Yeah, so it's...
so she's been getting heaps and heaps of media and support from USAID in an attempt to win back their you know, win back what they see as theirs.
Yeah, that's interesting the way that you know, in a lot of the history that you've been just going through with Nicaragua is mirrored in a lot of other countries in South America. Like, I was thinking of Haiti for a lot of that, the US invasion in, I think it was 1915 or something in Haiti, rather than 1912 in Nicaragua, and then the puppet dictators that have been put up. But the daughter of the former leader being fated for power next, similar to in, I think, Peru, where Keiko Fujimori was...
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. It's interesting the way that these things, these themes keep popping up.
Well, I mean, they have to pick a person who, you know, is sort of, let's say, clean and has some sort of link with, I don't know, some, you know, pure democratic, supposedly,
filial ties. But I think we have to wrap it up now. But thanks.
Yeah, well, Alan, I just wanted to, we're going to wrap it up, but I just wanted to have any, give you an opportunity to make any guests' final kind of comments you might want to make. And can even refer to your article in Green Left for people to read.
Well, I mean, I mean, it's so hard to have a revolution, left-wing revolution in Latin America or anywhere really in the world at the moment, but particularly in so close to the United States. And you ask Cuba about this. I mean, they have been struggling against U.S. embargo, U.S. invasions, attempt to assassinate Fidel and all that. Over, you know, 60 years now. The Nicaraguans didn't make it, didn't quite make it. I mean, I, in fact, went to Cuba after the Nicaraguan Sandinistas lost in 1990, and a minister there said, look, a Cuban minister said, the Nicaraguans shouldn't have had elections because in this part of the world, you cannot have elections on an equal, you know, level playing field. With the United States involved, it's not a level playing field. So don't give them the chance. And it makes you think, you know, maybe that was correct, but, you know, they want to have elections, but in a place like Central America or Latin America, it's very hard to have open and fair elections with that imperialist bully in the north. So... it's very hard to have successful revolution in the United States backyard.
Hmm. Well, thanks for kind of ending on that point. I mean, I'll just make one quick comment, but one of the interesting sort of things counters to that sort of point as well about elections is the experiences of Bolivia and Venezuela have also kind of shown that left-wing governments can, in a sense, use elections as a form of kind of mobilisation of in defence of the government against US sort of interference, although that's kind of like an ongoing kind of struggle as we kind of discuss regularly whenever we discuss the situation of Bolivia and Venezuela on this program.
Yeah, they're trying to do it through electoral processes, and you know, let's see how they go. It's a really hard road to plow, you know, it's a constant struggle, and it's been going on for more than 100 years.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Alan. I think you've given like a very good sort of overview of everything in Nicaragua. And in fact, I actually kind of learned a lot from the interview we kind of just did. So, yeah, thank you very much for being on our program.
Yeah, me too. Thanks,
Alan. No worries. Anytime. See you later, guys.
See you. All right. We'll just speaking to Alan Jennings, giving a bit of an interview and discussion about politics in Nicaragua. And, of course, if you look up on greenleft.org.au and check out the international section, you can have a bit of a read of his latest article for Green Left, which was the basis of what we kind of drew the interview for. I'll just play a few announcements. And we'll go on to the next part of the program. You're listening to Green Left Radio.